The Marlowe players present Murder in an Ice Cold Manner, Act Two. An hour has passed. Outside, the wind is still howling. A clock chimes 12. Sylvia and Ruth, in their dressing gowns, are with Catchpole in the drawing room. Sylvia is visibly shocked and upset.
It can't be true.
I'm sorry to say it is, m'lady. Sir Brian is dead.
Dead? Dead? I must go to him.
Do it, Sylvia. It won't do any good.
No, m'lady. The sight of so much blood would be extremely upsetting for you.
So, tell us again, Catchpole. You say you found Sir Brian slumped over the billiard table. Are you sure he was dead?
Oh, yes, yes. I could find no sign of life. In any case, no one could have survived such a vicious attack.
He'd been struck many times from behind, mainly on the head.
And you say the murder weapon is still there?
Yes, yes. A heavy walking stick. I recognized it at once. It's from the collection of sticks we keep in the conservatory.
And you found him just a few minutes ago?
Yes, I did. I made a particular note of the time. It was 4 minutes to midnight. I came immediately to alert everyone.
So it must have happened that sometime between 11:30, when Guy and Minzy left and we all went to our rooms, and 11:56... when you found the body.
We can be more exact than that, Miss Conrad. One of the blows struck Sir Brian across the arm, breaking his watch. It stopped at 11:52 p.m. I must have missed the assailant by only a few minutes.
Brian's watch is broken, not his Rolex Bubbleback Oyster Perpetual 18-carat gold watch.
I am afraid so, madam. His extremely expensive Rolex Bubbleback Oyster Perpetual 18-carat gold watch. Smashed beyond repair, in my opinion.
It's in your watch, Sylvia, dear. If it is a Rolex Bubbleback Oyster Perpetual 18-carat gold watch, one of the most expensive that money can buy. Now, Catchpole, what were you doing in the billiard room so near the time of the murder?
I was on my usual rounds of the house, making sure that everything was in order before I retired for the night.
I can't believe this has happened. We've never, ever had an intruder before.
It may not have been an intruder.
You don't think so? But then, oh no, you don't think...
I don't know what to think. We have to keep an open mind. But we'd better start by getting everybody together. I'll telephone the lodge and get Guy and Minzy back here.
Ruth dials a number on the telephone as Sylvia speaks.
Is that really necessary, dear? I mean, they can't have had anything to do with it. They roared off in that noisy old jeep, and we would have heard them if they had driven back.
Oh, hello, Minzy. It's Ruth. I'm sorry to disturb you, but I'll have to ask you and Guy to come back up to the manor. Yes, I know it's after midnight, and I'm sorry if Guy is in bed, but something rather dreadful has happened here, and I'm afraid you're just going to have to come. No, no, I don't want to talk about it now. I'll explain when you arrive. Right then, we'll see you shortly.
She hangs up.
Is there anything else you can tell us about your discovery tonight, Catchpole?
Well, there was one other thing. I noticed the conservatory door was open.
There! I told you it was an intruder.
Maybe. maybe the door was left deliberately open to make us think it was an intruder. Is it far from the conservatory to the billiard room?
They are at different ends of the house, miss.
Are they? And how long does it take to get from one to the other?
I can't say I've ever timed it. Not very long, I should think.
Less than a minute?
Probably not quite a minute.
And supposing it was an intruder, would they be likely to leave by the same route?
Not necessarily. They could have gone out by the French window in the billiard room.
Have you noticed anything else? Anything missing that might explain why an intruder would break in?
No, miss. There are a number of valuable items around the house, but nothing appears to be missing. The watch was smashed, not stolen.
So there's no obvious reason for it being an outsider, which means it has to have been one of us.
Oh, no, Ruth. What about Cook?
We would have to look for a motive. Can you think of any reason why Cook or any of the kitchen staff would have wanted to kill Brian?
Plenty.
Well, I can't say that I can think of one. Can you, Catchpole?
None at all, madam. Cook and the maid walked all the way to the village as soon as they had served coffee at 10:30. It took them an hour to walk there. They telephoned from the public phone box at 11:30 to say that they had got safely home. Excuse me, madam. I shall go and admit Lord Guy and Miss Baker.
Catchpole exits.
Now we have all the suspects together.
Oh, Ruth, I wish you wouldn't keep saying things like that.
I'm sorry, but I'm only trying to face the facts.
Mimsy and Guy enter, followed by Catchpole.
Oh, Guy, Mimsy, thank goodness you've come.
What is it, Sylvia? What has happened?
Oh, Guy, Brian is dead.
Dead?
Dead?
Dead.
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 But ow!
Murdered.
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 What happened?
Battered with a stick in the billiard room.
Battered with a stick?
Yes, yes, yes. The really important question is, who killed him?
An intruder, of course. A burglar.
No forced entry, nothing stolen. Not even the highly valuable Rolex Bobbleback Oyster Perpetual 18-carat gold watch which Brian was wearing at the time. No, has to have been one of us.
But that's ridiculous. Why would any of us want to kill Brian Burrows?
They all look at each other and turn away guiltily.
Well, I can vouch for Mimsy. She's been at the lodge since we left here.
And I can vouch for Guy for the same reason.
And were you with each other for the whole of the time?
Well, not exactly. We arrived at the lodge at 11:40 and shortly afterwards I went to bed. Mimsy went to her room.
It's hardly a cast iron alibi, is it? Either of you might have slipped out and got back without the other knowing. Brian's broken watch tells us that he was killed at 11:52.
If I might be so bold, madam, they didn't drive back. We would have heard that old jeep coming. My apologies, my lord. I'm sure it is a fine vehicle.
Yes, yes, Catchpole. And it would have taken us 30 minutes to walk back here around the lake. So, say that Brian was killed at 11:52.
The time his watch was broken in the attack.
There we are. We couldn't have walked back in time to do it.
But you can't deny the fact that you two have motives as strong as anyone here. You both wanted to see Guy back in his real home. Then tonight, Guy learned that he'd inherited a fortune.
So that was the good news they were on about.
With Brian dead, Guy can exercise his option to buy back Stocksley.
Now look here, that's ridiculous.
Oh, calm down. There are others here with cause enough to want to kill Brian Burroughs. Take Sylvia. Ever since her marriage, she has known that Brian was having affairs with other women. Then today, she caught him trying to force himself on someone under this very roof. Didn't she, Mimsy? Coupled with the fact he forced her to give up her career. And Guy, the man she really loved. It could have been the last straw.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
And so we come to Catchpole, the faithful family butler. But faithful to whom? To Guy, the 10th Earl of Stocksley, of course. Catchpole has never felt anything but contempt for Brian Burroughs. In him, he saw a vulgar, common little man who happened to have made money, probably through shady dealings. A man with no manners and no class. An employer who did everything he could to belittle him. There's nothing Catchpole would like better than to see Stocksley back with its original owner. Normal service restored.
But not murder, miss. Not me.
But each of you has a good reason for wanting Brian Burroughs dead.
Quite so, Ruth. We, all of us, and I mean all of us, stand to benefit from Brian's premature demise, including you.
Yes, well, but...
Yes, as nobody knows better than me who typed it up, he had you tied to a contract that channeled most of the profit from your books into his own pocket. You made a penny, he made a pound. You became increasingly angry, he became increasingly rich. And he told me that he was annoyed that you were coming to dinner tonight, giving you the opportunity to have another go at him about your monstrously unfair contract. Did you ask him to change it? Did you, Ruth? Did you? Yes, I think you did, and I know what his answer will have been. A loud and emphatic no. Did you kill him, Miss Conrad? Was it you who battered Sir Brian to death?
Stop it, Mimsy. Stop it. I can't stand it. It's bad enough that Brian is dead, but the thought that one of us killed him is too much to bear. And it could have been any of us. Any of us. Yes.
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 They all look at each other guiltily.
Yes, we might well all look guilty, all of us. Is there one of us who can honestly say, hand on heart, that he never said, I'd like to kill you for this, Brian Burroughs? No.
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 No, Sylvia, you are right, my dear. It could have been any one of us. But who? Who killed Brian Burroughs?
I didn't want to tell you. I want some love.
Sylvia, Guy, and Mimsy are in the drawing room. Ruth enters with Catchpole, who is carrying a heavy walking stick.
Catchpole tried to show me the billiard room. I'm afraid the merest glimpse of so much blood had me feeling faint and headed outside for some fresh air. I've written about murder scenes many times, but Brian Burroughs, battered to death with a walking stick taken from his own conservatory. Oh, we have to get this business sorted out, and the sooner the better.
Don't you think it's about time we call the police? Your ideas may be very interesting, but this is not one of your Mrs. Maple mysteries, and you yourself are one of the suspects.
Shall I notify the constabulary then, my lord?
Wait! Maybe we should have called the police by now, but we can blame the delay on the infernal weather. First, we owe it to ourselves to find out which of us did this thing. By exposing that person, the rest of us may be spared a lot of intrusive and painful questioning. Our efforts should help, not hinder the police.
How very public-spirited of you. Or perhaps it's just an excuse to get more information out of us in order to make your own story more plausible.
Do you or don't you want this thing cleared up as soon as possible? Whatever we thought of Brian, he didn't deserve to die like that. Suppose we give ourselves 15 minutes. At the end of that time, we'll call the police, no matter what.
That sounds fair to me, dear.
Catchpole and Guy mutter their agreement.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Mimsy looks angry.
Now, when we last talked about this, one thing was very clear. Each one of us had a motive, a reason for wanting Brian dead. Now, what we must ask ourselves is, who also had the opportunity and the strength to do it? The exact time of the attack was 11:52, as shown by the broken watch.
His extremely expensive Rolex bubbleback Oyster Perpetual 18-carat gold watch smashed beyond repair.
Yes, yes, dear. Now, Guy and Mimsy left in the Jeep, and we went up to our rooms at 11:35. So, in that 17 minutes, someone headed first to the conservatory for the weapon, then to the billiard room to do the deed. The question is, were all of us able to take advantage of that opportunity?
Well, of course not. Those in the house may have had time to do it, but for Mimsy and I, the whole thing would have been impossible. We didn't arrive at the lodge until 11:40, and Mimsy took your phone call at 12:05, so we would have had to have travelled from the lodge, entered the house, committed the murder and got back to the lodge all in the space of 25 minutes. Had one of us come in the Jeep, you would have heard us.
Most definitely, my lord.
And as it takes 30 minutes at a brisk pace to walk here from the lodge around the lake and the Seine to get back, it just couldn't be done. As neither Mimsy nor I drove back here, it couldn't possibly have walked here and back in time. It just couldn't have been one of us.
Yes, thank you, Guy. I had worked most of that out for myself.
So, you dragged both of us out into the freezing cold just to tell us what we already know. That we are innocent. Oh, come on, Guy. We'll leave them to it. Give them some space to decide which of the three of them is a murderer.
Oh, dear, I do so hate all this falling out. Ruth is doing her best to sort this out, Mimsy. We shouldn't take it all so personally.
You don't call being accused of murder personal?
Well, we're all under suspicion, dear. Let's just get this over with.
All right, but if this isn't over soon, I'm off.
Thank you. Now, Sylvia, let's talk about you for a moment. You can't deny that you both had motive and opportunity. And since you live in the house, you know your way around. Obviously, you would know about the sticks in the conservatory.
She moves to the stick and picks it up.
Here, feel the weight of this walking stick.
Sylvia is horrified to be shown the stick.
Oh no! Don't tell me that's the...
No, that isn't the murder weapon, Sylvia. That must remain untouched until the police arrive. But this is a similar stick from the conservatory. Feel the weight of that.
She hands it to Sylvia, who takes it reluctantly.
Oh, it is heavy. But I would never have dreamt of physically attacking Brian, whatever he may have done.
But you had good reason to. He took you away from the theatrical life you love and brought you to a place where you've been vegetating ever since. You may have accepted all this until you discovered that he is still chasing other women, and sometimes not even being discreet about it.
You're right, of course, Ruth. My love for Brian had died, and a cold hatred was creeping in to replace it. But I am all talk and no action, dear. I might have spoken of killing him, but beyond hurling a drink in his face, I couldn't.
I believe you, Sylvia. I do not believe you killed your husband. Whoever did wielded a stick like this one with considerable force, enough to not only kill him, but to make a mess of his head and break his precious watch.
Sylvia drops the stick.
You see, it's too heavy for you to hold. Never mind batter Sir Brian to death. You have not fully recovered from your fall and the injury to your wrists. You did not even have the strength to open the bottle of Hitler's brandy, let alone use the kind of force which the killer put into their frenzied attack on Brian Burroughs.
Only me and her left, then, and I didn't do it. She must be about to find herself guilty.
Did you say something, Catchpole?
Just muttering to myself, miss. A rather bad habit of mine.
And here's another bad habit of yours. You listen in at dinner table conversations.
I would hardly say I listen in when you're attending the table. You can't help but overhear what is being said.
Maybe. But should you then gossip about it, what you have heard?
I'm sure I...
There's no need for excuses. I'm just making a point which I'll come back to in a moment. First, let's look at the facts. You admitted to being in the billiard room within minutes of the murder, so you had the opportunity to actually do it. We know you had the motive. You would have done almost anything to get the Stockley family back in the manor. Like so many butlers, you are a hopeless snob, and you hated the common Brian Burroughs being your master. The news that he was about to become a lord pushed you over the edge. Of course, there's no chance of Lord Guy Stockley buying the place back, even if Burroughs died. He simply did not have the money. Not at least until a few hours ago, when news came in of his cousin Roland's death and his inheritance of £1 million, enough to buy back the manor and some to spare.
I'm sorry, madam, but I did not know of his lordship's inheritance at the time of the murder.
Which brings us back to the conversation at dinner tonight. Guy Stockley asked us particularly not to mention the subject of his inheritance while the servants were around. He was anxious to avoid any premature gossip.
Even if I had overheard something, I'm sure I would not have betrayed his lordship's confidence in that way.
Maybe not. However, the fact that Guy asked us not to talk about it, and I'm sure that Brian would not have wanted you to know about it, proves to me that you did not know about the inheritance at the time of the murder.
I think I may have already made that point, miss.
Which means that, as far as you knew, Brian's death would mean that somebody else would be buying the manor, not Guy Stockley. The agreement would be finished, and the chances of the Stockley family ever living here again would have been zero. This is exactly the opposite of what you were after. I have therefore concluded that you would not have wanted Brian Burroughs dead. Well, not yet, anyway.
So you're saying that I didn't do it?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Well, that's a relief.
You say it was one of us here, but you agree it can't have been me. It can't have been Mimsy. You say it wasn't Sylvia, and now you say it wasn't Catchpole. So...
It was you, Ruth. Catchpole, call the police.
Ruth, no. I know how upset you've been over your contract with Brian, but how could you lose control of yourself like that? How could you kill anyone, even a rogue like Brian?
Stop it. I did not kill Brian Burroughs.
But you...
Just look at the facts for a moment. I have never been to Stockley before. I am not familiar with the layout of the place. How could I possibly have gone straight to the conservatory or the billiard room or have any knowledge of the collection of sticks as potential weapons? When you're planning a murder, you do not wander around in the hope of finding a weapon and then trust to luck that you will come across the victim.
You could have found out these things after you arrived.
Oh, dear. But Catchpole, was there much blood at the scene of poor Brian's...
I don't wish to add to your distress, milady, but since you ask, I
great deal of blood had been spilt, I'm afraid.
Then it couldn't have been Ruth who did it. Ruth has a morbid fear of the sight of blood. She fainted when she gave herself a little cut. At the sight of as much blood as that, well, Ruth would have been lying on the floor next to Brian when Catchpole arrived on the scene.
Thank you, Sylvia. I might have been able to poison Brian if I'd been so inclined, but I could not have killed him in such a bloody manner.
So we're back to the intruder theory again.
Are we? We haven't exhausted all the possibilities here yet.
Yes, we have, Ruth. You've looked at everyone in this room in turn and dismissed them as suspects. Mimsy and I could not have got back from the lodge in time, as it takes 30 minutes to walk around the lake, and we could not have driven. You would have heard that old jeep coming from a mile away. Sylvia's recent injury to her wrists meant that there was no way she had the strength to wield the stick and do so much damage to Brian Burrows. Catchpole wouldn't have wanted him dead, as he did not know that I now have the money to buy this place back. And you pass out at the sight of blood. Even a small cut on your finger does it, let alone the bloodbath in the billiard room. Whoever the murderer is, it's not one of us. You've convinced me of that.
I don't remember saying it wasn't you, Guy.
Well, of course you did. Everyone heard you agreeing with me that I could not have done it in the time.
No, I did not. What I agreed with you about was the time it takes to walk around the lake from the lodge to the house.
Yes, which is 30 minutes at least. You say the murder was committed at 11:52. You rang the lodge, got a reply at 12:05, which, by my calculations, is 13 minutes later, taking into account that some time would be needed to get clear of the house after the murder. There is no way it could have been me.
No, when I rang the lodge, it was Mimsy who answered the telephone. You might still have been out then.
This is nonsense. Guy was upstairs at the lodge in bed by midnight, and I'm prepared to swear by it. He didn't do this.
As a matter of fact, I'm inclined to agree with you.
What?
I think what you say is true. I did think at one time it might have been Guy, but his shoe size is too big.
His shoe size? What are you on about? Oh, stop this at once. This is just a game to you, isn't it? A plot for your next book, I shouldn't wonder. Well, I don't think you should be playing with people's feelings like this, and it's time it stopped.
Mimsy heads for the door.
What about you, Mirabel Mimsy Baker? Can you account for yourself at the time of the murder?
Mimsy stops and turns.
Do we have to go through all that again? It was me who answered the telephone at the lodge at 12:05 a.m., 13 minutes after the murder. I would definitely not have had more than 13 minutes to do it, get clear of the house, run around the lake, get back into the lodge, answer the telephone, not the least bit out of breath, and speak to you.
I agree with you. We know that you did not drive, and that you couldn't have done it by walking or even running around the lake. But suppose you had taken a more direct route.
Oh, really? What am I supposed to have done? Flown across the lake?
Now who's talking nonsense?
Well, there's no boat to get across. One has been sold and the other sank a long time ago. And I haven't yet mastered the art of walking on water.
No, but you have, Mimsy. But only in this, the coldest winter for 50 years, when the water is frozen. The lake is a sheet of ice at the moment. You took a chance on it being strong enough to take your weight, didn't you? But for a woman obsessed with seeing the man she loved restored to his former position, it was a chance worth taking. So you walked to and from the lodge directly across the lake, a journey of only a few minutes. You entered the house by the conservatory door, which you'd left unlocked. A simple matter for someone who works in the house like you do.
Mimsy, this can't be true.
Of course not. It's pure speculation.
Is it? When Catchpole and I went down to the billiard room and I felt faint at the first sight of blood, I took the opportunity to slip outside to the lake for some fresh air to revive me. I had a torch. Some of the recent snow is still lying on top of the ice. It's only a thin scattering, but enough to show footprints in both directions at the lake's narrowest point. A conveniently short route from the lodge to the house. Small, dainty female footprints, definitely not Guy's. So whose? I'm sure it will not take the police long to find out once I point them in the right direction.
But how would Mimsy have the strength to wield such a heavy stick and land such blows to kill Brian? She slipped on the ice yesterday and sprained her right wrist very badly.
In her native France, Mimsy was better known as Mirabel Belanger. Before the war, 3 times winner of the French Tennis Open, renowned for her strong left arm smashes.
Mirabel Boulanger?
Oh, no, Mimsy, I had no idea.
Incredible.
All right, I did it. I killed Brian Burroughs.
No, Mimsy.
I only did what you all wanted, every one of you, to be rid of that horrible man. When he made another pass at me tonight, it was the final straw. Then I heard about the inheritance. I decided that I would do anything to see Guy back in his rightful place and not have to work for Brian Burroughs any longer. Well, whatever happens to me now, I've succeeded in that.
There is stunned silence, during which Mimsy sobs and Sylvia comforts her. Guy hands Mimsy his handkerchief.
Shall I ring for the constabulary now, my lord?
Wait a moment, Catchpole. Wait a moment. Ruth?
It could have been intruders, of course. After all, I am just a novelist and not a real detective.
Sylvia?
And suppose his very valuable Rolex Bubbleback Oyster Perpetual 18-carat gold watch was missing from Brian's body. We all saw him wearing it at dinner, didn't we? The intruders must have stolen it. Catchpole?
If you will excuse me, my lady, I believe that I left something in the billiard room, and it is at time for me to remove it before contacting the police.
The mood suddenly lightens, and Mimsy stops sobbing. There is a pause.
Poor Brian. A tragic end. But he wouldn't want us to mourn him for too long, would he? I know. How about celebrating Guy's good fortune?
Shall I fetch Herr Hitler's brandy, milady?
An excellent idea, Catchpole. And Catchpole, don't forget the ice.
Have been listening to the Marlowe Players presentation of Murder in an Ice Cold Manor. The part of Sir Brian Burroughs was played by Max Sassim, Lady Sylvia Burroughs by Jocelyn Pierce, Lord Guy Stocksley by Brian Cooling, Mimsy Baker by Alison Rogers, Ruth Conrad by Wendy Gammond, Catchpole by Andrew Stafford. The narrator was Hilary Cox. Sound effects were by Karen Moyes and Andy Scott. The recording was by Brian Cooling. The play was directed by Gloria Kendrick. Thank you for joining us. We do hope you enjoyed listening to the Marlowe Players.